This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show. It is a Tuesday, the 16th of April. Here's what we've got for you. Well, breaking news, when we came on air this morning, official confirmation that Spinneys, the supermarket chain, is going for an IPO. We've got details and reaction from Samir Lakhani, the Managing Director of Global Capital Partners. What else? Big focus on the travel industry today, looking back at Eid al-Fitr, but also looking forward to Eid al-Adha travel and the shoulder season in between. Going to hear from two people. We've got Philip Wooler from STR Global. They're the research company. He's been crunching the numbers. And a travel agent, Emily Jenkins of DW Travel. Finally, talking economics. Today, Tuesday, is the first day of the spring meetings of the IMF and the World Bank in Washington, D.C. We've been getting some insight from the economist Masoud Ahmed. Great guy, Masoud. He is currently the president of the Center for Global Development in Washington, D.C., so in the heart of those meetings. He was for almost a decade the head of the IMF for this region, the Middle East and North Africa. I spoke to him earlier on today, that full interview coming up. First up, though, let's jump straight in to that breaking supermarket news.
It's a difficult day out there on the roads, on the travel, schools, work and otherwise. We are weather affected. We will have regular weather updates for you in just a few moments' time. But business does not stop. And big news coming through this morning. The much talked about, the much discussed Spinneys IPO is go, go, go.
Yeah, they're headed for the tills. Share sales are going to start ringing up on the 23rd of April. Going to get some quick reaction now to the details that have just come out from Spinneys. We woke up to the official notice being printed in the papers in the last 20 minutes or so. Spinneys has come out and put a few more things in the trolley, if you like, when it comes for information. We are speaking to Samir Lakhani, Managing Director of Global Capital Partners. And by the way, at 7:30 tomorrow, we will be speaking to the CEO of Spinneys to get more information directly from them. But for the moment, Samir, Market Watcher, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you.
So we knew this was coming. It was just a matter of when. Which of these details out of the number of shares being offered, et cetera, particularly speak to you, particularly on the retail side?
Well, they've given a 5% offering share tranche to the retail investors, which is a bit lower than what some of the preceding IPOs have done. Given the expected level of oversubscription, that may well change. That is the right that they deserve. More recently, what they've come out with is their dividend policy. 70% of their net profits after tax will be paid out. That will come across as good news for institutional and retail investors alike. I think one of the trends in this entire IPO train that began roughly 2 years ago has been that UAE issuers have been ahead of the game in terms of realizing the need for inflation-adjusted cash flow models. Given that inflation has become the genie that has become very hard to put back into the bottle, Spinneys qualifies. Its net profit margins has been steadily increasing based on the data that they've come out with. Their gross profit margins and their net profit margins are double that what you see in comparable markets like in the U.S., for example, with stores like Albertsons and Walmart. They have a 27% market share in Dubai, and they're looking forward to their first opening store in Saudi with more aggressive expansion plans to come.
Right, let's dig into some of that fine print. Let's start with that expansion strategy. Quite a lot of details in what Spinneys has just come out with about the amount of white space that they are looking to open. The equivalent of 538 Spinneys stores by 2033 is what they say, including the launch of more kitchens by Spinneys, a new dining concept, and what they're calling Spinneys Swift, a hyper-local e-commerce platform. What do you make of the expansion plans?
It's hyper-aggressive. right? And they're not resting on their laurels. They already have a decent market share in Dubai, 27%, 12% in the UAE. But they're looking to expand very aggressively, given the strong growth trajectory of the UAE economy. But they're not resting on that. They're expanding both horizontally and vertically across not only the region but across platforms with e-commerce, with different concepts, and that is all the more impressive that with this kind of expansion, they have announced the dividend policy that they have.
This is probably going to be one of two supermarket offerings. We are obviously looking towards Lulu as well. What will other private sector companies considering making the plunge be looking for in this IPO? What will they be watching to see?
Well, they'll be looking for the uptake, but the uptake is of no surprise. I mean, we have had near instant oversubscription to virtually all of the IPOs that have been announced. The baton is clearly passing on from the privatization program that the UAE embarked upon now to the private sector growth, to the private sector companies participating. I think companies will be looking not only as how retail and institutional investors are responding, they'll be looking particularly towards the retail mindset and how they respond, not only in the primary markets, but also in the secondary markets, because that is an important indicator for investor loyalty. We've had performances all over the board, but more often than not, we've seen companies that have performed very strongly in the secondary market, and I think private sector companies will be encouraged by that.
And for retail investors buying in here, what story are they buying into? I want to say population play, but I also see that Spinney's here looking to open up a food production facility in 2027, looking towards food sustainability. What other story does this throw up?
What Spinney's is doing is something that you're seeing, you know, a lot of companies in this sector integrating, you know, vertically and horizontally, trying to secure the chains. There is this implicit understanding that there needs to be better hedges against inflation, just so that profit margins are maintained and in fact increased. Inflation remains a dominant theme for investors, and they would be encouraged by the strategies that Spinney's is putting into place with regards to some of the policies that they've announced.
Sameer Lakhani, Managing Director of Global Capital Partners, going through the 5 or 6 pages of detail that we've just had released from Spinney's for their upcoming IPO. Thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning
and the thunder. Thunder, feel the thunder. Right, let's give an update on what's happening with the weather. It has really closed in now. We've reached out to Paul Griffiths. He's fresh off a flight. Lucky old him, he's got his feet on the ground, that's for sure. Advice then from the CEO of Dubai Airports.
What we're saying is check the website, check with your airline, check the circumstances for your particular flight before you leave for the airport to avoid, you know, unnecessary journeys, because obviously with schools and offices and businesses closed today because of the weather, we don't want people to go out and take journeys unnecessarily when their flights may be delayed.
So Richard Dean's checked his bags in already. Mine might be travelling later on. We'll find out. He'll be checking in advance. Is that the advice? Serena Kelly's here in studio.
Yeah, well, I've actually just had a message from a friend who's listening, and she's just heading back from the airport, having dropped somebody off. She sent a video. The roads are extremely flooded. So, again, the advice, take the Dubai Metro if you can. But they've been following, listening to us, getting the updates, checking with the flight, and they were advised it's been delayed by an hour. So in that person's individual regard, then it's an hour delay, but they're still hopefully departing. So yes, again, as you heard with Paul Griffiths, check with your flight and make sure that you just get to the airport, give yourself enough ample time to get there. if you are travelling today.
I'm just looking at the roads as well. They're getting more and more congested as the day goes on. That'll just be the water, the flooding.
Yeah, and I think the advice, obviously, as you've all been saying this morning, you know, for example, schools have been home learning today. Again, federal government entities, if they've not been needed to be on site, they've also been working from home technically or remote working. And the same goes for private companies. They're just saying if, especially when it comes to those working outdoors, they need to make sure those safety precautions with them getting to and from site are in place.
People will, of course, want updates throughout the day because it looks set in for the day as well. How do they do that?
Yeah, you just need to check out the Air and News Centre app. If you download it, you'll get push notifications. And also, just to let you know, with the weather, it is supposed to continue adverse conditions into up until about tomorrow evening sometime.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Talking travel and tourism this morning on the Business Breakfast. In an hour's time, Brandy's going to be speaking to the travel agent Emily Jenkins about bookings for Eid al-Adha. Yep, just 60 or so days away. But right now, we're going to talk data because Philip Wuther's in the studio. He is with SDR, the research company. Philip, good morning. Thanks very much indeed for being with us.
Good morning, Richard.
So, lots of anecdotes about what's busy, what's not busy in Dubai and forward bookings. You don't listen to the stories, you look at the data, you crunch the numbers. What did they tell you about Eid al-Fitr that's just gone?
Well, across the Emirates, Eid was very busy. In fact, interestingly, Ras Al Khaimah was the busiest of all the Emirates and actually achieved the highest average room rate, over 1,000 dirhams. And I think, interestingly, Ras Al Khaimah was pretty much full for the entire week, sort of hitting 90% occupancies. Here in Dubai, it was a little bit of a slower sort of development. The weekend was very busy, 92% occupancies at the weekend, but the preceding sort of few days, around about sort of 65, so not so busy, took a little bit of time to sort of build up into the weekend.
So good but not great in Dubai, Ras Al Khaimah knocking it out of the park. How was the holy month of Ramadan? And what do you compare it to? Do you compare it to 2023? Do you compare it to 2019? How do you gauge that?
Well, we still look at 2019. I think, you know, just to answer that question, globally, I think it's interesting to look at how demand has moved from 2019. And it only really broke through the 2019 barrier in 2023. So demand globally is 4% ahead. I think the really interesting story is average room rate. We'll come back to that. But from a Ramadan point of view, even though Ramadan is moving into the winter months, nothing really changes from an occupancy point of view. Still around about 65%. The big reason for that is the conferences, the meetings, the big exhibitions. They don't take place during Ramadan, so you're going to displace quite a lot of business there. But generally, leisure business was pretty strong. So around about 65%. Average room rates have moved quite a bit over the last few years, 750 dirhams. So relatively good.
So, and you talk about average room rates, of course. How many hotels have we got in Dubai at the moment?
We've got about 750, 152,000 rooms, so as big as London now.
So finding an average room rate is not an easy task, is it? But that 750 average daily rate is something you're focusing on quite closely and the industry is focusing on quite closely. Again, how are you benchmarking that to, say, pre-pandemic?
The average room rates have moved significantly. I mean, worldwide average room rates have moved, from a regional point of view, 25 to 30%. Some cities are a lot more than that. I was looking at some of the data of the European cities. Three quarters of the European cities had an average room rate growth of 50% over the summer. And this is, you know, from I think it's great that the industry has moved on, particularly from the pandemic, but things are beginning to slow down. I think that's the important thing. To sustain that level of growth is pretty much impossible. Room rates are starting to level out. They're not dropping, they're just leveling out. So that's the important thing.
Let's get your crystal ball out, Philip, because you do look at forward-looking indicators as well, such as bookings. We've got a couple of things to look forward to. Eid al-Adha, of course, is a couple of months away. But we've got this shoulder season, haven't we, in the middle of that, where we have got big events. You've got World Future Energy Summit in Abu Dhabi starting in about half an hour, is it, Tom?
Yeah.
Thereabouts. Middle East Energy here in Dubai.
big AI shindig happening down at the Museum of the Future tomorrow, and so on. So we're in action for the next 8 weeks or so. What's the data telling you?
Well, I mean, we track business on the books and it is looking strong. I mean, generally speaking, business comes in relatively late. But if we compare year on year, still looking strong. It's 4 or 5% ahead of where it was last year. Big events, very, very important as we get through to the summer. There are big events in Europe over the summer. We've got the Olympics in Paris, and we've also got the European Cup. So it's going to be an interesting sort of next 3 or 4 months.
What's the picture in Saudi Arabia?
Still going great guns. I mean, the if you look at all the different cities across the region, Riyadh has the strongest average room rate.
Stronger than Dubai?
Stronger than Dubai. Dubai is number two.
What are those comparators?
It's around about $260 in Riyadh, and about two year-to-date numbers in Dubai, around about $250. So about $10 behind. The Saudi market's very, very busy with leisure business as well as domestic leisure mainly, as well as the corporate business as well. So Jeddah good, Riyadh good, Eastern Province good, and obviously we've got the giga projects now beginning to open hotels. So it's a very exciting time.
I'm guessing Saudi. For things like the Red Sea project, a few hotels are open now. We talked about, is it the Ritz-Carlton, $3,000 a night or whatever it may be. Probably not enough data for STR to crunch yet, I would guess.
No. We can't, because we need minimum amount of hotels. We're not quite there yet. But it will take a little bit of time to ramp up for sure in the giga projects.
And what about the pipeline of new hotel developments? Because again, that's something else that I know you track, isn't it?
We do. I mean, across the world, I mean, as an asset class, hotels are still very, very desirable. In a way, commercial real estate has fallen off a cliff. Investor caution. A lot of interest rate hikes. So from a debt point of view, there's a lot of problems in commercial real estate. But we have 2.5 million rooms in the pipeline across the world. Here in Dubai, another 27,000 rooms in the pipeline. On top of the 152,000. So it will become the third largest hotel in the world in the next couple of years.
Wow, that's a big number.
What, it is indeed.
What's one and two?
Beijing and Shanghai.
So we'll overtake London?
London, Tokyo and Vegas. Depending on, London's still got quite a lot of supply coming in. So it's a battle between those three.
Right. Happy
Incredible.
Days.
Yeah.
No wonder the airport is the busiest international airport in the world. Philip, Thomas, quickly.
Yeah, just a quick one. I just wanted to know, I'm just casting my eyes out. We're still a far way off the weather affecting people coming to the UAE. I mean, we've seen probably the most intemperate year to date.
Yes.
Does that change plans or not?
I think it will do in the medium term. The Brits come here for the sunshine. If there is any changes, and it has been a strange couple of months, I think, weather-wise, it will affect the business. Yeah, I'm sure it will. We will have to keep an eye on that.
Philip Wooler of STR, always nice having you with us in the studio. Thank you very much indeed for getting up early to speak to us this morning. Philip is the Area Director for the Middle East and Africa at STR Global.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Speaking of rising prices, though, flight prices over Eid al-Fitr spiking have got us asking whether or not residents are getting in early for the 5-day Eid al-Adha holiday. Very pleased to be joined now by the travel expert Emily Jenkins. She's head of product development at DW Travel. Emily, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy.
Talk to me first about what kind of demand you saw, what kind of growth for Eid al-Fitr.
Sure. So Eid al-Fitr was a fabulous time, very busy. Obviously, with the longer holiday announced for the full week, we saw very strong demand. The fact that it came off the back of the 2-week spring break meant that we had already been seeing really strong bookings. We had some interesting new destinations coming up in terms of travel to Poland, South Korea, Kenya, which was good. And then we saw a lot of people really taking advantage of that much longer holiday break.
If you were to put a really rough percentage on how much Eid al-Fitr was up this year on the year before, because obviously it's that big 9-day stretch, as you say, and dovetailing with the holidays, what would you put on it?
So for DW Travel this year, the first quarter, we are up 36% year on year in terms of sales.
And has Eid been a major contributor to that?
Yes, a large percentage of it.
So here's the question. What does it mean for forward bookings for the next Eid? 5-day holiday, not as large, but still. Are people getting in earlier to try and get more affordable tickets?
So interestingly, we are actually seeing stronger bookings coming in for the summer holiday break at the moment. So I believe if you have a look at the timing of the next Eid holiday, it is only a couple of weeks before the start of those long school holidays. So I believe from what we're seeing at the moment, that Eid the next Eid al-Adha break, we're seeing a lot of couples booking for those 5-day, you know, closer to home short breaks, whereas our forward bookings for summer are looking a lot stronger. What we've actually seen just in general this year is that people are booking longer holidays. I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that because the cost of the holiday is higher than it has been in previous years, people are utilising, you know, that they've already spent the money on the airfare, so they may as well stay away longer than doing multiple holidays throughout the year.
What do prices look like at the moment?
So our average booking value year on year has been up about 15%. There are multiple factors driving that. There definitely is an increase in the average cost per holiday, but we're actually also seeing people are booking more premium cabins and more boutique and five-star hotels as well.
For economy prices, and if we again take Eid al-Fitr out of it, where are we on the price curve between pre-COVID prices, and then that sort of revenge travel spike? Are we getting anywhere back to normal?
Yeah, so I believe based on some of the numbers I've been looking at, we're definitely getting closer back to that pre-COVID number. Again, if airline pricing is complex, do you know what I mean? So it's based on often to do with the itinerary, the booking class, but more than anything, it's based on demand. And if you have a lot of people travelling, like you do at peak periods, and those promotional fares sell out faster, obviously the price of the holiday, the price of the airfare is driven up.
I ask mainly because we chatted, and it was a couple of years ago now, to Tony Fernandez, the boss of AirAsia X, who was the founder. And he was talking about the low margins in the aviation industry and saying this might be a new normal. Prices may never go back to where we saw them 2019 and before. Yeah.
I think it very much depends on the route, though, as well. So, you know, as a fellow New Zealander, I've been looking at flights back home for Christmas, and the price of that ticket is up considerably. And a lot of that is to do with the fact that the airline capacity hasn't increased back to New Zealand again to be anywhere close to what it used to be.
Is it affecting where people are going to? You talked about those longer travel times, and it sounds like families are holding off for summer rather than Eid al-Adha. But are people staying closer?
So I think, again, there's a couple of factors driving this. We are still having issues with people with many nationalities being able to get Schengen visa appointments and USA visa appointments. So we are seeing that that is driving a lot of customers to book holidays in either those visa-free destinations, Georgia, Turkey, etc., or in Asia, where it's a lot easier for many nationalities to get visas. Those destinations generally too tend to be a bit cheaper as well when it comes to holidays, and would allow you to have a much longer holiday at a lower price.
And the trouble in visas, which I know George has done quite a bit of on the agenda, Richard and his family have come up across it firsthand, that's changing where people are going to?
Yes, because I think, well, I guess there's two parts to it. I think, again, it's driving people booking further in advance. So, you know, we've always been a very last-minute market where people would book and travel within a month of departure, often even 14 days. So we are seeing that more and more people are booking 2-3 months in advance to be able to secure those appointments and plan ahead. But absolutely, we are seeing that that drive away from Europe for summer and more into Asia.
If we're booking longer holidays because of higher flight prices, are we also therefore, people have got a limited amount of leave, booking less holidays?
Yeah, so recently we conducted a study of of our DW Travel customers, and there were two really interesting points that came out of that. One of them was 32% of our customers are planning to book at least 3 months in advance for their holiday, and 42% of our customers are planning on only having one holiday this year. And that second one I was actually really surprised by because, you know, we've had these years, as you say, of revenge travel, and you can see travel demand is up considerably. When you look, you know, year on year, we We grew as a business last year 39%. We're already first quarter and up 36%. So you can see that travel demand for both business and leisure travel is growing. So for people to say they're planning on only having one holiday this year, I thought was quite an interesting statistic.
How does that double, though, with the people you're seeing at the front end of the plane, that luxury boutique travel you spoke about? Are you also at the same time getting some better heeled, some higher ticket customers?
Yeah, so I think it's possibly two stories in one here, in the sense that we are seeing people maybe saving up to having one bigger holiday where they're spending more, flying premium, you know, staying in nicer hotels. But we are also seeing the other side of that, where we are a big... We are seeing a lot of growth in those luxury holidays and people travelling regularly.
Do you have any insight from the conversations that you have with embassies and the like for how long those issues with the Schengen visas are likely to last? What does the backlog look like, and when are you expecting things to start getting back to normal?
Honestly, that is a really difficult question for us to answer.
How long is a piece of string?
Yeah, because and every country is slightly different. I know, you know, there is a lot of conversations around it in terms of how it being a barrier to people travelling, and how can we continue to grow until those kind of barriers are removed. But I do know there are a lot of countries that are also talking about, you know, more e-visas. You know, the UK have made it a lot easier for GCC countries. They have been talking about the ETS program for Europe. I believe all of those are planned to try to make it easier in the future.
Emily Jenkins is Head of Product Development at DW Travel. We wanted to know if after the massive spikes in ticket prices for Eid al-Fitr, if people were booking earlier for Eid al-Adha, but it sounds as though a lot of families are just holding off to summer. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Yeah, let's get more on that World Bank report. More broadly, the spring meetings of the World Bank and the IMF begin in earnest today in Washington, D.C. Earlier, I crossed live to Washington, D.C. to speak with the economist Masoud Ahmed. Now, he is currently president of the Center for Global Development in Washington, but he was for nearly a decade the boss of the IMF for the Middle East and Central Asia Department. So he knows Dubai well. He knows the region very well indeed. So I caught up with him to look at some of the big issues facing not just this region, but the world in general. And I asked him this week for the spring meetings. There are many big stories, but what is the big story that's going to be on the agenda?
I think the big story, Richard, is that as the ministers, the central bank governors, the economic leaders all fly into Washington, they're reminded yet again, as they were at Marrakesh when they last gathered 6 months ago, that economics and politics are now deeply intertwined. You remember 6 months ago, they got gathered just as Hamas had attacked Israel. Now there's a question about what the latest flare-up in terms of the Middle East could mean for markets, could mean for their world. So that's the background. And then they've got a set of issues that have been on the table for a while. Inflation is proving a little bit harder to contain. U.S. economy is doing well, but that's, if you like, the flip side of that is that interest rates will probably remain higher a little longer. And the poorest countries... they're quite worried because half of them haven't even recovered to the level of incomes that they had before the pandemic. So the scars run deep. And I think all of these things are weighing on the minds of these leaders as they come in to try and see what they can do using the two institutions that the world has to deal with global issues, the IMF and the World Bank.
Well, Kristalina Georgieva of the IMF will be presiding over this meeting. She's just secured a second term unopposed. And I saw that you sat down with her just a couple of weeks ago for an extended interview about some of the issues she's facing. And one of the things she said was when she took over in 2019, the big challenges were low productivity and anemic global growth. And 5 years later, she said that's still what's keeping her awake at night. Any prospects of any solutions there?
I don't think we're going to see any quick fixes on either of those. Fixing low productivity, because without productivity going up, you really can't get growth going. And if you don't have growth, it's very hard to fix many of the problems that you face, particularly in the developing countries. So I think that requires a whole set of actions over the next year, 2 years maybe, including trying to see how we can harness AI, artificial intelligence, to try and help countries to make faster progress on productivity. And then I think the other big issue which she faces, which the IMF faces, is that we're living in a world where shocks are going to be more frequent, deeper. And does the IMF, does the international community have the toolkit to be able to help countries deal with these shocks? So that's another issue that's on her agenda. And I would say one more issue, Richard, if I may, which is climate change. It's happening now. You can see the consequences across the world, and it's only going to get worse over the next decade. And are we able to use these institutions to provide the financing that developing countries need to be able to make progress in dealing with climate?
Well, indeed, we're seeing climate change this morning in Dubai, torrential rain, and they've closed all the schools in Dubai. And it's the middle of April. You know this region well, not something we're used to at this time of year. But that's, of course, a trivial example of that. If we look at some of the more substantive issues, new report from the World Bank out within the past few hours about the Middle East and North Africa, and much as I think we would expect, strong economic performance for petro-economies like the UAE. They've raised the growth forecast 3.9% this year, even more next year, and yet they warn of the catastrophic effects of the war in Gaza, particularly, of course, on Gaza and the West Bank, but neighbouring countries through mechanisms like tourism, through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. As an economist who's covered this region for a long time, if we look hopefully at a future of rebuilding this region, what would you say is the playbook?
Look, I think the first thing to say is that Middle East economic outlook, more and more a tale of two cities. You see the oil exporting countries, as you just said, Richard, doing well, likely to do well. I think I should also say that if you look at the UAE, if you look at Saudi Arabia, if you look at the other GCC countries to some degree, it's not just oil that's driving their growth now. They are becoming more and more diversified. They're big investors in renewable energy. So they are consciously planning for the post-oil future. And that's what's driving entrepreneurship, it's driving investment, and it's driving growth. But if you look at the oil importing countries in the region, they're not doing so well. And if you look at the countries that are being impacted directly or indirectly by conflict, that is going to be a huge drain on them, and it's going to be a drain on their neighbors. So I don't see much reconstruction happening until the fighting stops. Of course, then we're talking primarily at the moment about Gaza, but you can see conflict in other parts of the region as well. So politics and economics, once again, becoming very intertwined.
A final quick word, if I may, about two countries very close to the heart and the economy of the UAE, which are India and Pakistan. Of course, the two biggest populations here in the UAE. You yourself, of course, from Pakistan. Elections recently in Pakistan. We got one starting in India in a few hours, maybe a few days' time. Very different dynamics there. How are you reading it?
Well, India is at the moment really doing lots of things right in the economic front. And if you look out the global economy, one of the bright spots that the IMF has called out is India. And I think if you look ahead for the next 10 years or so, you can see many reasons why the Indian economy would continue to grow and become more powerful as an economic force on the world stage. India has lots of issues. It has still lots of poor people living there. It has states that are falling behind within a federation. And so there are clear issues that have to be sorted out on the economic front there, but it is on a good track there. Pakistan has come out of a very difficult period, economic period. Last year was a very difficult year, hardly any growth to speak of. They've now got a new government, and I think this is the opportunity for the new government to come together and lay out a program of economic reforms that will tackle many of the long-standing issues that have held back economic growth in that country. Two very big numbers, very big issues in there are, first of all, that their tax take, their government revenues are quite low in relation to what they need to spend. And secondly, they don't export enough. And These are two things that will help them to address some of the challenges that they're going to face over the next decade.
Masoud Ahmed, the president of the Centre for Global Development, the CGD, former IMF director for Middle East and Central Asia Department, in conversation with Richard Dean.
This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a DubaiEye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from DubaiEye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.